from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, a very, very special episode for many reasons. First and foremost, it is episode number 50 of the history of the podcast. And in order to truly encapsulate the history and how far we've come, we reached back to the founder, if you will, Brendan Mortensen, the man with the idea that said, hey, let's put out some Syracuse basketball, Syracuse football, Syracuse athletics content, and let's make it in the podcast form, because what's cooler than a podcast? That is Brendan Mortensen. Brendan Mortensen joins the podcast. It's me, Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman, and Brendan Mortensen. For the first time in front of your face, possibly, we're out on podcasts. We're now starting up on YouTube, so some very big news all over the board here. And Brendan, just, it's pretty cool to be back, huh? Look at this on the other side of things.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, when I started the Ostrom Ave Pod, I didn't think that we would hit 50 episodes. I thought it might be a fun little thing that we could do, but it's awesome to see what it's grown into. And now we're on YouTube. I never would have thought we'd be on YouTube. So that's a lot of fun.
Podcasts, YouTube, they're one and the same now, apparently. And that's where we're rolling with this. So some big news for the 50th anniversary and a big episode. We don't have our normal sort of preview episode here. What we're doing is debate style. We've been out on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod, reaching out for debate questions. We got two from you guys, a couple that we sort of looked at and then decided to go against. Unfortunately, for the news with PJ Clark, we wanted to talk Frank Howard on this show, but we just couldn't do it as one of our big segments. So we're doing three debates here. Owen versus Ben with B-More as the big time judge. Ben is going to be our rules expert for the day. So we'll go over the process and then we'll dive right into this.
Yeah, thanks, Owen. Happy 50th episode, and apologies to everyone watching on YouTube for this thing I have on my face. But this is Orange Arguments. So as Owen said, we have three questions today. Some of them are from the past. Some of them are from the present. Some of them are macro kind of all-time questions, and they deal with Syracuse men's basketball and football. So what's going to happen is I'm going to kick it over to Brendan. He'll read the first debate topic, and then he'll pick one of us to start. We'll state our position and then give our reasons for why we think that position is the right one. Then when we're done, the other person will get a chance to rebut that position and also give a little bit of, you know, what would have been their opening. Then person A goes once again for about 2-3 minutes, a shorter answer. And then B-Mort's going to give his opinion, and he'll let us know who he thinks is the winner, which won't be based on his opinion, but based upon who he thinks argued their side better. So without further ado, I think we can get into it, Brendan.
All right, let's do it. Question number one surrounds the Syracuse 2-3 zone. The question is, to zone or not to zone? Jim Boeheim's 2-3 obviously brought Syracuse a lot of success over the last 45 years. But the zone, we know, is a hot topic for fans. Some are happy with it, and some makes them pretty angry. So is the 2-3 zone good for Syracuse, and would the program be better off and win more games playing man-to-man? Owen, we'll start with you.
I have drawn the card that I am saying that They cannot be all 2-3. However, I am going to qualify and say that, yes, they still need to play the 2-3. Because when you've got a system as mastered as that, and Jim Boeheim, who may or may not actually be the founder of the 2-3 in creating this, you know, beast, some like it, some hate it. He is the founder, if you will, in terms of bringing it to this landscape and sticking with it for 40 years, or many people have looked against it. And traditionally, and for my 20-year upbringing, I've been all for the 2-3. But recently, I am looking for a little bit more of a different look. And that's where my answer falls in this one. I want to see something else. I want to see something different. A man-to-man look would definitely help, especially when you look at certain teams that Boeheim has had in the last half decade. I know the 2-3 works when you've got that length up top, when you've got those athletic guards that have that unreal length. You look at the Michael Carter Williams of Syracuse past, that length that just is a monster to pass through. You can't do it. It works wonders. But in the last 4 or 5 years, there have been a handful of teams that could pull it off, but also a handful of teams that just struggled start to finish, never really showed that they had anything to offer in terms of pulling off the 2-3. And this year's team is the case in point. They are short up top. They are not very agile. They are not too active in the passing lanes for the majority of the game. They've got moments where it works, but I think this team would beyond benefit from a couple of man-to-man looks here and there to do something to try and shut down a team when you are struggling so severely to take care of the high post. Maybe you mix things up. I know you've got those moments where you go into halftime and Jim does what made him a Hall of Fame coach and makes those adjustments. And sometimes you figure it out. But as you've seen this year, sometimes you don't, and games get out of hand. And Syracuse has had a handful of ugly losses, and the majority of them are attributed to the defensive side of the ball, specifically the 2-3. They've got to be able to mix and match looks. I'm not saying ditch it. I'm not saying you don't have to play it the majority of games. You can play it the majority of games, but you've got to start looking to do something else. You've got to bring some man-to-man ball in here. They're trying to mix it up, but mix it up without the zone. You see, they're trying to do something different. They're pushing the wings up and almost playing like a 4-1 at moments in this year, and it still doesn't work. Stop trying to make the zone work. Stop trying to put the square peg into the circle hole, because this year's team is a circle, and you're trying to shove this square 2-3 zone into a squad that cannot pull it off. And when you cannot pull it off, you've got to be able to make adjustments. And that is why I'm asking, please, Jim, just for a little bit, see if something else can work with this group and this personnel.
So you're going with the Joe Girard defense of they're too small. I see what you're saying there, but I would attribute that more to poor recruiting, and not poor recruiting as in not getting five stars. They just haven't recruited big guards in the way that they used to recruit big guards, except for this year's Kadari Richmond. I think that Joe Girard is more of a problem for the zone than the zone is a problem for Joe Girard and all the other players in there. We talk about this year, well, the centerpiece, the big man, Barama Sidibe, hasn't been in there. And I think that's a big reason that rebounds haven't been getting pulled in either. And Owen, you can't lie that you're a big Barama Sidibe fan. So you can't argue against that. I wasn't expecting you to go with some of those points, but I'll go against some of the other arguments against the zone as well. You know, a lot of people think it hurts recruiting because guys want to play man. Well, Syracuse has had good recruits in the last few years with Jalen Carey, Darius Baisley, and Bryson Goodine. They just turned into about nothing on the floor, and one of them went to the G League, but that's not Jim's fault necessarily. He's still finding ways to get ESPN 100 guys to come in. I also think if you commit less to the zone, then you're going to make the team worse at the zone overall. When you bring in freshmen, when you bring in transfers, which Syracuse have relied on heavily in the last 2 years, these guys, it takes time for them to learn the zone. And there's nothing like playing the actual zone to learn it. If you're switching in and out of man, the team may as well ditch it altogether, because they're not going to be nearly as good at playing the 2-3 as they would usually be, and therefore wouldn't be able to stop the usual attack points of the zone. I think Jim Boeheim's built his 45-year career of success, even if it's slumped off a little bit recently, on the back of this zone. And even if players aren't coming in at the rate that they are usually, you know, it allows people to maximize the talent of less talented players to play the zone. Not only does it make everyone a better defender, it slows the game down. And Syracuse isn't playing in the Big East anymore. They're playing against teams that are frankly a lot better than them in Duke and North Carolina and Louisville. And they need to slow the game down so that they can stay in the game longer. The only way to do that is to play the 2-3, keep the pace low, and hope that you can outshoot the other team from the 3-point line as they've been doing.
I got to get this out there as well. I know for whatever reason, going anti 2-3 in the least bit screams anti-Jim Boeheim. And I am not anti-Jim Boeheim, although maybe one of you two could be at this point in time. I'm still supporting Jim. I do think that you need to just look and try and shift some stuff around. And that's sort of where I fall on this. I'd love to just see it tried. And I know people are going to point back in time to the game where Syracuse plays Lemoyne in an exhibition. And Jim says, go ahead, play man. And Syracuse loses to Lemoyne in overtime. And that was the last time they played man-to-man defense. I get the story. I know it. But that was with a good team. That was a while ago. And this is a very different situation. When you look at the team currently and you look at where they've struggled in years past, it is because of their defensive issues. They can make up for it sometimes offensively, and slowing the game down helps a little bit. But when you look at the case of, you know, other teams that go to slow the game down, you sort of circle Tony Bennett, Virginia, and how they work to slow other teams down. And it works because they're winning. Syracuse is trying to slow teams down. And yes, they're slowing them down a little bit, but it's not doing enough to win games. And that is exactly what people want. That's what the fan base wants. That's the objective of the sport, for crying out loud. You need to win games. You've got to be able to figure some stuff out. And I think that's going to come with increased versatility. I don't think you have to go and completely abandon ship. You can continue to do this. You can continue to practice the 2-3. But you look at this team, Quincy Gary has been here. He's been trained in the zone. He still sucks at playing the zone. He's been great offensively. Look at him. He's a lost dog defensively. Same goes for Alan Griffin, but I'll give him a little bit of an excuse because he is a first-year transfer, didn't have the gap year. You've got to just start, and maybe it becomes an 80-20 thing or a 75-25, but you've got to start to look for another option, specifically this year. When the personnel works, the zone is unbelievable. But when the personnel is not fitting and when the shoe doesn't fit, you're going to get a blister. And that is exactly what the 2-3 is to this season. It is a blister on the heel of everyone's feet.
Before I let Brendan come in, you know, you insulted Quincy Guerrier, which made it way more personal than it needed to be. But to think that playing man 25% of the game makes Syracuse drastically better, in my mind, just doesn't make sense. And I think this is a Syracuse team that just got into the next four out. If they win a couple games, they might sneak into the tournament. They need the zone to make tournament runs. They've had teams that are frankly not very good that make runs, like the recent Sweet 16 a few years ago, because teams like Michigan State that year are not used to playing against the zone. It doesn't surprise people in the regular season. It will surprise people in the NCAA tournament. And if Jim gets there, they typically go dancing. So that I think you got to keep it and stick with those values that have gotten you there so many times. And now I'll give it to Brendan.
Brendan, Ben wasn't supposed to get a rebuttal there, so I'm going to chime in one more time. I didn't say each game was going to be 75-25. Maybe you approach a game and play man basically the whole time. I think tournament games can easily fit into that 75% window where the 2-3 has shown its success.
They haven't practiced man all season. You want them to play man right now in the middle of the year?
It's a hypothetical debate, and we are starting fresh next year or something like that. I'm just saying it wouldn't hurt. I mean, you look terrible defensively game in and game out. Try something else. These guys have played careers. They got recruited based on their ability to play man. Let them play man again. It's not that hard to learn man. People know it naturally. It's hard to play man at, you know, an incredible pace and at an incredible level, but you can figure it out. And I'm not saying that it's going to be an overnight snap of the fingers and you're back and you're in man-to-man and you're winning every game humanly possible, but I'm just saying a little mix and match here wouldn't hurt that much, would it?
Well, this is just bringing me right back to my Syracuse career. I can't tell you how many times I left the Carrier Dome and everybody who I was with, there were just arguments on both sides about whether or not Syracuse should abandon the 2-3 zone. And I think both of you made some really solid points. I think one of the points that was interesting is that I think recruiting is definitely an issue, and it's a little bit of a two-sided coin where you need to recruit those bigger guards that are going to play well at the top of the 2-3 zone, but you probably aren't getting as many top-ranked recruits as you could if you were playing man-to-man. And it, because, like you said, I mean, there's guys who are going to want to go into the NBA, and they're going to want to be able to showcase that they can play solid man-to-man defense. The thing with switching to man-to-man, if you are a solid 2-3, we're talking about Joe Girard and how he really hasn't been fantastic at the top of the 2-3 zone. I'm also not entirely convinced that if you throw Joe Girard in man-to-man defense, he's going to be much better. Joe Girard, I just don't think is a really quality defender. That's not really his MO coming out of high school. It was that he could shoot and score the ball. So I don't know if you put Joe Girard in man-to-man coverage that he does any better. I think given the points that both of you made, I'm going to go with Ben on this one because, I don't know, I think as long as you have Jim Boeheim, I mean, you live by the zone, you die by the zone. And right now you're kind of dying by the zone because a lot of the issues that Syracuse is currently having in terms of their recruiting, the guards that really haven't been able to play well at the top of the 2-3. Richmond has looked really good at the top of the 2-3. And it's Jim Boeheim's bread and butter. I mean, you can't take Jim Boeheim and say, okay, play man-to-man defense. I don't know. I don't see it. And I think once Syracuse hopefully gets into the tournament, that's where the 2-3 zone really excels. It doesn't excel in much in ACC play where teams see it often. In the tournament, it works a lot better than it seems to work in the regular season because hopefully you are forcing teams into taking long perimeter shots and it's working the way you want it to work. But I think as long as Jim Boeheim is the Syracuse head coach, you've got to live by it and die by it. So I'm sticking with the 2-3 and I'm going with Ben.
So glad to have you back, B-more, by the way. Really, really happy.
Oh, and you made some quality points. You made some.
Okay, we're going to find another guy to come on and do the last two questions for you, though. That's okay.
All right. Well, it's one nothing for me. We have three, though. So hopefully, I mean, don't mess around here. But if I win the next one, Owen, I could go for the clean sweep. The third one will be for pride then.
I know. I'm down to play for pride, but I hope it doesn't come down to that.
All right. Let's go to question two.
All right, question number two. For obvious reasons, it's been quiet at the Carrier Dome. No fans there, but Governor Andrew Cuomo has started to allow fans to return to larger scale arenas, so SU students might be able to come back to games soon. Will that make a big impact for Syracuse on the floor? Will they start to win some more games with that home dome advantage? Or is it really not going to make that much of a difference having fans back in the stands? Ben, we'll start with you. Owen went first last time.
All right, I'm going to make a claim that's going to upset a lot of people, but Syracuse fans, you're not that rowdy of a crowd. I'm sorry. There are crowds in Kansas. There are crowds in Indiana. When you pack it full with 35,000 and the Duke Blue Devils are in town, I'll put that in a top 10 environment. When Boston College comes to town and there are 4,300 fans in the crowd, I don't know if we're really shaking the dome with that one. So I just think first and foremost, this isn't the normal crowd. It's not going to be nearly what it's like to be in an actual game. And to a certain extent, the crowd noise, the fake crowd noise, might be louder than the 4,900 fans who are distant around the Carrier Dome. Also, I want to point out that Syracuse in the conference, because these are only conference games for the rest of the year, not that great at home, not actually something that's been a huge strength for them. Historically, yes. I know that Owen might be looking up right now that they've won 83 or something percent of games at home, but this isn't the Big East Syracuse. This isn't Mello's team or Dave Bing. This is recent Syracuse. And over the past 3 years, the Orange are 14-14 at home. And on the road, they're 14-14 in the conference. So it's not like the crowd has really made that big of a difference. Last year, they had a better road record than they did home record. So I just think right now, with the number of fans coming in and the recent way that Syracuse has played at home, it's not going to make a big difference. They're going to be as good or as bad as they have been.
They're 9-1 at home this year, Ben. Just throwing that one out there. There is a little bit of a difference. But when you do look at it, and it's something that you brought up, and the big game environment is definitely something to be stated. They're 54-30 all time. in those crazy 30,000 plus games. That's winning two thirds. And when you think of those games, I mean, you're playing top tier talent in those games. So you don't pack the dome for nothing. And that sort of goes to your point that you made there. So I'll give you that. But when you are playing these top tier teams, you're packing the dome. It works. They should not be winning at that clip. They shouldn't have been winning at that clip. And so the crowd is big. And when you're used to playing, you played 10 games at home with no crowd, 1,500 students who are, you know, had a few put back, didn't have a few put back, getting ready to go, haven't really done anything in terms of a social environment in 12 months. You're going to tell them that they can go to a Syracuse basketball game, not just a Syracuse basketball game. You're going to finish the season at home against North Carolina. You've got a Syracuse UNC game inside the dome. 1,500 fans is going to be rowdier and louder than you've ever seen and ever heard. Just comparatively, you're playing in silence. I remember game one of the season, I'm sitting courtside for WAR for whatever reason. I'm calling color commentary. I don't know why, but I'm in there. I'm taking in some environment. I'm taking in some notes. Alan Griffin has one of the nicest alley-oop finishes I have ever seen. And it didn't matter. They just moved on. They did the next play. All right. So you're telling me getting 1,500 people on their feet, going crazy, experiencing that, celebrating that, getting back into a communal aspect of things. Syracuse fans as a whole, yes, Ben, they are a little bit older. Sometimes they can get a little sluggish. Sometimes they're just cranky to be around. We know it's okay. We deal with them. But 1,500 Syracuse fans, you're going to have freshmen in there who've never seen a game, sophomores who have only seen a couple of games, seniors dying to get one more fill of their Syracuse basketball home game atmosphere. People are going to be beyond crazy. It's going to go back to the crazy days where you're tenting out for days at a time, weeks at a time, whatever, for a Georgetown matchup, a Connecticut matchup in the dome. 1,500 tickets are going to be the equivalent of a Bitcoin at this point. They're going to be so coveted. Everybody wants one. Everyone would want to be part of that elite group that can enter the dome. Ben, I get your point. I get some of your thoughts on this, but I just cannot agree with you right here. 1,500 fans inside the dome for a big time matchup with Syracuse and UNC. I know the league's down. I know North Carolina has been down the last couple of years, but it's still Carolina. The Tar Heel atmosphere, the Tar Heel aspect of that thing will get people rowdy, and that will be beyond an incredible environment in terms of comparativeness and just in general to be able to get people in there, be rowdy, have it be a younger crowd, which it's not typically, and ideally for everyone in there, maybe have Syracuse get an upset win.
First of all, the time Owen did color commentary needs to be a story told on a future pod. But the first point you made, the 9-1 record at home this year, I think I can work that in my favor in two ways. First of all, six of those games were non-cons. And with the exception of Buffalo, they were all nobodies. And yeah, I'm talking about you, Georgetown. And then 3-1 in the conference this year. How much better, like how much better can the fans make it than 3-1? I could argue that Syracuse, given they only lost a one possession game to UNC on the road, had a good chance to beat UNC anyway. I don't think 1,500 people are the reason that Syracuse beats UNC later this year. I just think that the lack of actual atmosphere there with such a low number of people and the fact that I just don't think the home field advantage is actually that big for the Orange. I just can't see a major change in Syracuse's play. I don't see Syracuse blowing out UNC. They probably blow out Boston College on Saturday, but who really cares? So I just think it's the same old with 1,500. You may as well just turn the fake crowd noise up a notch.
Their only loss at home, they blew an 18-point lead. You're not going to blow an 18-point lead with fans there.
It's completely different. Justin Champagne-less Pittsburgh. Take that home court advantage. They lost to a Justin Champagne-less Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and fans would have changed the pace.
All right, fellas. I'm going story time for this one. My freshman year, it's a Syracuse-Duke game. I know that with these restrictions and things like that, Syracuse is not packing the dome for a Syracuse-Duke game. But we're in there freshman year. Grayson Allen is playing for Duke. Everybody in the student section chirped Grayson Allen so hard that that dude was missing layups in the layup line before games. And if you let myself and Owen in there for a Syracuse-Duke game later on in the season, I mean, it could be just the two of us, and we're still telling Matthew Hurt that his facial hair looks stupid, and that man's rattled for the rest of the game. I mean, he's out. He's taken out. So, Ben, I'm sorry. I think you drew the short stick here. I'm going with Owen on this one. I don't care how many fans are there. You put some fans there, and at least Syracuse players are thinking, all right, we're playing for somebody. You know what? We're not playing for an empty stadium. We're not playing for the broadcasters. We are playing for Syracuse fans that are excited to be here. And like Owen said, I mean, people have gone without live sporting events for so long that people are going to be dying to go back to the Carrier Dome to see a game. And I mean, you get one senior in there with some dome nachos and that place is loud. That's all I'm saying. So I don't know if the Syracuse record will be a lot better with fans there, but will they make an impact? Absolutely. So I'm going with Owen on this one.
Thank you. We have, I don't have to play for pride in round three here. We're going to have a big one and possibly our favorite debate for whatever reason. Ben and I have brought this up in quiet and calming times once we take the record button off in the past. So it's fun to finally get this one in front of the viewers and now, or the listeners and now the viewers here as we go to YouTube. Once again, you can subscribe to us at whatever YouTube handle we end up picking because this was an impromptu idea. So Brendan, take it away for question three, debate number three. I do believe they say this one's for all the marbles.
It is for all the marbles. And I was incredibly confused when this question was presented. I had not thought of this question, I think, ever before, but apparently it is a hot topic between the hosts of the Ostrom Avenue podcast. So for this one, I mean, we're diving back in. It's 1998. Michael Vick is choosing between Syracuse and Virginia Tech. But instead of going to the Hokies, this time he goes Syracuse. He goes with the Orange. He plays out his career before going to the NFL and presumably brings Syracuse a lot more success than their quarterback at the time. Does it change the present Syracuse team? Does Vic going to Syracuse make the Orange a drastically better program, like everybody said that they were after they beat Clemson? Does Michael Vick have that effect on Syracuse? Is it a different ACC program today? Are they near the top, or are they the Syracuse football team that we know and love? Well, kind of know and love.
This team is good. If Michael Vick comes to Syracuse, they are good. They're obviously, I'm not going to come out here and say that they are going to tier above Clemson, because I think to tier above Clemson, that means that Michael Vick coming to Syracuse is going to put Syracuse at a number one or number two team in the country year in and year out. And that's not the take I'm here to make, but I am here to say that Syracuse football is damn good. If Michael Vick comes to Syracuse today, they will still maintain that mantra. You think about what that means, what the emphasis on having a mobile quarterback at Syracuse that gets drafted one or two in three drafts. You've got two first or second picks in three drafts between Vic and McNabb. You have set yourself apart as the place to be as a mobile quarterback, and you can bring in guys year in and year out to continue that aspect. You saw it in the past. You saw what developing storied running backs can do, and continuing that success, it brings more people in. People want to continue that tradition. I think if Vic comes to Syracuse, that tradition is created and established, and Syracuse wins more games. I'll tell you what, I think they win a Big East title with Vic that first year. He did it at Virginia Tech. I think he would have done it with Syracuse. No one was touching Miami the next year. You're not going to say they won four straight, but all right, when they come in and they win first year under Vic, their third straight Big East title, Syracuse football is still legit. They're still figuring things out, and they continue to bring in good players and continue to build. And what happens a few years later, Paul Pasqualoni does not get fired. And when Pasqualoni doesn't get fired, Ray Rice continues his success and he stays with Syracuse. He doesn't decommit and go to Rutgers where he runs for 5,000 yards. He stays and has an unreal 3-year career in Orange. And I'm saying this, and I understand that I'm now pitching that Michael Vick staying brings two controversial humans into Syracuse. That's not what I'm here to say. I am here to say that that is big in terms of continuing a success story, and a success story brings people in. There are reasons that the same teams bring in the best recruiting classes year in and year out. People want to play for good programs. And if you can develop yourself as a good program, which I think Syracuse could have done had Vic stayed, and then you've got Ray Rice in here, and you've got big name guys coming in and continuous top tier first round draft picks, you have built yourself a program. Pasqualoni stays for a few more years. Maybe he goes to the NFL, what have you. I don't know. But you've got better coaches that you bring in after that. You continue the success train. I don't think it would have changed when they left to the ACC, but I think when they got to the ACC, they would have been a much more competitive team, and not just a single 10-win season in this 6-year, 7-year span since joining the conference, 4 or 5. It could be something that could be repeated. It could be something that you come to expect, and something that you can see out of Syracuse football being in the upper echelon of what could be a decent conference in college football.
Oh, and Syracuse football died when McPherson went to the Patriots. And his career probably did too, because he is long forgotten after Bill Parcells got there. But Pasqualoni was never going to get this right. You saying that he wouldn't have been fired, I think the only positive you can take from that is maybe they just skip over Robinson altogether, because Syracuse football was making bad decisions in the late 90s and early 2000s after McNabb left. Look, Michael Vick would have been great. We can all agree that Michael Vick would have been great, because he would have been great anywhere. But there were other great guys that they could have used to parlay into big recruits. They had big success, and Pasqualoni routinely was not able to bring the people in. I mean, Freeney's there in addition to McNabb, and there just wasn't a big movement from Syracuse to help secure the right guys to parlay it into success. I mean, I found a Bleacher Report article that in 2008 they declared the program dead, because it went so haywire from 98 to 08 from some of the internal decisions being made. And let's say Pasqualoni does turn into Robinson, then my gosh, it's all down the drain anyway, because that was a brutal era of Syracuse football, and it's just mismanagement. I think if Vic was there, he slightly delays what ends up happening to Syracuse, where they go from, you know, this upswing in the 90s to going back down in the 2000s, but it still happens, and it probably just happens a little bit closer to 2010. By the time they get to the ACC, the Orange are in a lot of trouble. I mean, the ACC is already just way too much of a handful for Syracuse. And I think that happens no matter what. These programs in the ACC have been consistently good throughout the 2000s. I don't think Syracuse is able to get to an ACC level of consistently good because of a great quarterback in 1999 or 2000, if he redshirts like he did at Virginia Tech. I think that at the end of the day, SU still ends up dipping after Vic's departure, and they can't handle the ACC schools, and they can't run away from the snow. People don't want to play in the snow. The dome is cool. All the guys talk about loving visiting here, but they all go to Miami. They don't want to live here. They want to live with the palm trees and the beaches, and Syracuse just couldn't keep up eventually with all these Southern schools in the ACC who are recruiting against them.
I will say it's tough to recruit to Syracuse. I went on a trip to Clemson, and my biggest takeaway from that trip was that no wonder no one comes here. Okay, it's beautiful down there. I understand that aspect of things, but Ben, you bring up one point, and I mean, this is not going to win me the argument, but I do have to acknowledge it. I think a lot of Syracuse faithful would say that if Paul Pasqualoni just stayed long enough that we didn't have to deal with Craig Robinson, they would be jumping for joy. Okay. That is a win in its own, but I'm not going to try and win this argument based on that information. I think when you look at this program, and yes, maybe you see Vic as a prolonger of the inevitable, but I think it could present the opportunity that Syracuse is able to exceed expectations at that time. And if you bring in that history, you establish that history, you bring McNabb and Vic back to back, and maybe you connect to when this program was the cream of the crop, the upper echelon, the best of the best, a national champion winning team for crying out loud. When you look at this team, if you could reconnect and put yourself back into a conversation of showing that this is a team that can consistently win 9, 10, possibly even 11 wins in single seasons, when you can put yourself back into that conversation, back onto that throne, it goes a drastically long way. I think you can bring in better recruits. And who knows? Paul Pasqualoni stays for even two more years, and you're in now, what, 06, 07? Maybe you can bring in somebody a little bit better. And I don't think you'll ever have to go down the Greg Robinson train or go down a coaching train that hasn't been incredible, to be very honest. Obviously, Doug Marrone looked okay for a little bit, but definitely didn't have what it takes at the NFL level. Once again, not how I'm going to win this argument, but just throwing that one out there as well. When you look at what Vic could have brought to this team, he brings the connection to when this team was the top tier. And that is what Syracuse needs. They need to bring back. When people see, when you look at young fans and you talk about the history that Syracuse had, they don't know about it. Nobody knows about it. So if you can bring in 4, 5, 6 years of greatness, and then the gap that you look at shrinks a little bit, that is what Michael Vick can present. He can present the opportunity to once again reconnect with your past and be able to build forward from it, because the success train brings players in. And when it comes to quarterbacks, you can promise them half a season without a single blow of wind in perfect conditions. No rain, no sleet, no snow, no wind. They're playing in perfect conditions where all they need to do is show off their arm. And that is what can bring players into the dome. That is what can bring players into Syracuse. That is what can maintain the quarterback legacy that McNabb and Vic, a number one and a number two in the NFL draft, can start for Syracuse. They will come back and they will become a phenomenal program if this happens. And I love to circle it. We love the conversation. And that is exactly why we're bringing it public now.
Win some games in the Big East, sure. It's not happening in the ACC. And you can't convince that Northeast kid to not at least go to Boston College or something. I just don't see it happening.
He was in Virginia. You could have came to Syracuse.
Not him. I just mean, we're talking 2021. I mean, Syracuse can barely handle the Northeast. They go out to Hawaii to get guys. So, you know, they really, I think, lose the Northeast region anyway, and it falls apart in the ACC, if not earlier.
Whew. This is tough. Both of you guys have made very good arguments, and I think deciding on it kind of lies in how you're presenting the question. Is Syracuse a drastically better team? The way the question was written was, is Syracuse a drastically better team in the ACC right now? And I think that is incredibly difficult to project. Saying, does Michael Vick bring Syracuse success in 2021? I have no idea. But I think one way or another, it's really hard to say. Does Michael Vick make Syracuse a better team right now than they were then? I think that's the question that I'm going to try to answer, I think. Is that fair? Because I don't know whether to say, is Syracuse going to be an elite team in the ACC? Because I don't think that happens whether Michael Vick is with Syracuse or not. I don't think they become an elite team in the ACC. So if that's the question, then I side with Ben. However, if the question is Syracuse football a better program because Michael Vick went to Syracuse? Are they winning at least a few more games, maybe not top of the ACC? Are they winning a few more games? Then I'm siding with Owen, because I think if you look at, I mean, take even recently, I mean, a guy like Eric Dungy, I think Eric Dungy's success is probably, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I assume that it's a reason that Syracuse is even able to get a decent quarterback recruit like Tommy DeVito. I don't think Tommy DeVito comes to Syracuse if you don't see the records that Eric Dungy is able to set and the numbers that he's able to put up and the success that Syracuse team is able to have. I mean, obviously you can look at Syracuse basketball and think how many guys want to come play for Syracuse because they know that that's where Melo went and Melo had one of the best freshman seasons of all time. So I think if you're looking at Michael Vick from a perspective of, okay, he comes to Syracuse, he has a good amount of success, and then maybe you're able to get some better quarterbacks down the line because they see McNabb, they see Vick, and Syracuse wins some more games here and there. In my head, I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to come to this logical conclusion of which one of you is going to win. And I honestly, like I said, it's two different questions for me. Is Syracuse at the top of the ACC right now because of Michael Vick's success at SU? Probably not. Is Syracuse football better because Michael Vick is there? Do they win a few more games in 2020 and beyond because of Michael Vick? Yes. So I don't know who I'm giving this to.
I'll let the record show.
I'm conflicted.
I think you're
giving it to Ben.
I think Owen called 4 or 5 10-win seasons in the ACC in his argument. We could really just not give the listener any closure and call it a tie.
We could, but
I'll give it to Ben. We're going to stick to what was written. The question that was written, Brendan sided with Ben. We will give it to Ben.
Owen, here's the question I ask you. Who wrote the question?
I did. I will also let the record show that I texted Owen before.
My thing with the question is that I think asking is Syracuse a top team in the ACC is an incredibly high bar to meet. So from Owen's perspective, if you are arguing that Michael Vick having success in the late 90s and early 2000s makes Syracuse an elite ACC team in 2021, that is almost an impossible argument to make because so many dominoes have to fall for that to occur. I mean, the recruiting has to be miles better for years. You have to probably avoid that dip for a little bit. And then, you know, building off of that 10-win season with Eric Dungy, I don't know if Syracuse recruits a better quarterback than Tommy DeVito because of Michael Vick. I mean, I think Tommy DeVito is probably still your Syracuse quarterback either way. And I don't know if they recruit a lot better at a bunch of different positions because they had success. So I don't know. I think that is a really, really high bar to set to answer that question. But I think there's a pretty good chance that Syracuse is probably a better program right now. Better program meaning maybe a few more wins here and there.
Oh, and I'm okay calling it a tie. I don't want the asterisk win.
That's fine. We can't call it a tie. Ben, I'm giving you the win. I will say this. Maybe Syracuse gets someone who was a little bit better from that Elite 11 class because, boy, was DeVito possibly the worst of the worst outside of maybe Tate Martell, who just decided that maybe football wasn't actually good for him. The rest of that Elite 11 class, maybe they bring in someone else. I don't know. Ben, I'm going to give you the win because I can't end this in a tie. I will forfeit. We are going to show that the show is going into good hands in a couple of months. All right. So we're going to give you that as a moral boost. But if this ever gets brought up publicly, then I will throw the asterisk out there just so we have that one out in the open. Brendan, we brought you on. We are more than pumped to have you back on the Ostrom. We're going to sort of give you the spotlight here. What are you up to? What have you been doing? What's life like post Ostrom pod?
Yeah, I am still podcasting amazingly. I mean, somehow somebody saw the Ostrom Avenue podcast and said, that's the guy. So I am down here in Baltimore working for Masson. I am covering the Nationals and Orioles for the Masson digital team. I am a co-host of the Masson Orioles podcast. You can check that out wherever you're finding the Ostrom Avenue podcast. You can also probably find the Masson Orioles podcast if that's something that upstate New York listeners are interested in. I'm going to guess probably not, but hey, you never know. So I'm doing that. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm working with the digital team, with social media, all that good stuff, and trying to do some podcasting along with it. So if anybody is interested in that, give us a follow. However, I'm going to guess that the listeners of the Ostrom Avenue podcast are probably not the biggest Baltimore Orioles fans in the world, but you never know. So that's what I've been up to. But I have been following along with the Ostrom Ave podcast, and it is so cool to see what it has grown into over these 50 episodes. I mean, the social media presence is a million times better. The podcasts are a million times better. It's awesome. I'm so excited to see it and really proud of you guys and what you've built this into. It's awesome.
Brendan, we thank you. We really do. Without your idea, we don't have 50th episodes. We don't have one episode. We don't have any social media. We don't have any social anything. So we do tip our caps to you. We thank you so much. We are glad that we can sort of have this history and this historic atmosphere for a historic moment in the terms of the podcast. And as we continue on and hosts will come and go, we do always, it will always revert back to Mr. Mortensen, who gave me a phone call one day and said, hey, I'm starting a podcast. Are you on board? And what a great decision that was. So Brendan, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for all of this. It's been a fun 50th anniversary. It's our a very fun welcome into the YouTube atmosphere. Only fitting that B-Mort gets to stick with us. It was on episode one. He's now on YouTube episode one. So episode 100 and YouTube episode 50. B-Mort might have to make another big return. So thank you so much. It has been a lot of fun, my guy.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This was a blast.
All right. Ben Shulman, Owen Valentine, special guest and founder of the Ostrom Avenue podcast, Brendan Mortensen, signing off here. Give us some follows. We've got a lot of follows to give out today. Follow B-Mort on Twitter. Follow Ben on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. Follow at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. Give us a like, subscription, comment, anything you want when it comes to wherever you get your podcasts. Do the same thing for Brendan's podcast. I know maybe you're not the biggest Orioles fans. Who can be an Orioles fan the way they've been playing? But still, you can leave him a 5-star rating, go on with your day, and he will reap all of the benefits. So for Ben, Brendan, and myself, Owen Valentine, thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you tomorrow for our Boston College preview episode. And we will have all of the coverage continuing for you. So thank you so much for listening. Stay safe.